WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Philip Seymour Hoffman gave terrific performances in three of the more interesting movies of the past couple of years, Boogie Nights, Happiness, and Next Stop Wonderland. He's in two films coming out soon, Magnolia and The Talented Mr. Ripley. Hoffman is currently starring in the film Flawless. He plays a drag queen who has a cabaret act. His downstairs neighbor is a homophobic retired security guard, played by Robert De Niro. Early in the film, the security guard is disabled by a stroke, which affects his facial muscles, making it difficult for him to speak intelligibly. When his physical therapist advises him that singing lessons will help him talk again, the only cheap and easy way to get them is to ask his drag queen neighbor to become his teacher. In this scene, De Niro asks Hoffman how he became a drag queen. Hoffman explains that as a child, he was always miscast as big male characters in musicals like The Snow Queen.
We were all on stage, and they had made these dry ice kettles so they could smoke come out of them, you know? And one night, all of a sudden, one dry ice kettle exploded, and dry ice flew everywhere. Well, Pretty Little Miss No Talent, who was playing the Snow Queen, dashed off the stage screaming and pulling her hair out. Well, the play must go on, I believe, and she had dropped a crown. Well, honey, I just picked up that crown, put it on my head, and I was the greatest damn Snow Queen in the history of PS11 Paramus, New Jersey. And I've been wearing dresses ever since. But I don't like the term drag queen, you know, because most drag queens just want to, you know, parade around looking flawless, you know, and if they sing, you know, they lip sync to records. And I'm a singer, and I'm a female impressionist. I'm an artist, you know?
Well, it's a bullshit. You're a f***ing drag queen.
Let me savor those lovely words for a moment, all right? What are you, channeling Jesse Helms?
What did you do to try to make this character a real person and not just a stereotype of a drag queen?
Well, hey, I had a good start. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't feel like the story had the possibility of playing a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this story had that possibility because of the transgender issue, where I wasn't just going to be playing some, you know, entertaining, flamboyant drag queen character, which isn't very interesting to me. What's interesting to me is this person I really had to look at the fact that there was somebody who woke up every morning with a task at hand, which is how can I be the best woman I can be, you know, and that's his task from the minute he wakes up, you know, and I found him researching this role and practicing this role that it was very hard to be the best woman I could be because physically and vocally I had everything going against me.
Like what?
Like that I have a very low voice and I have a body. I'm like 5'10", I weigh 200 pounds, and, you know, I'm kind of built like a wrestler. And so I didn't have much feminine about me to work from. And so in going at this character, I realized the frustration I was coming up against was really the humanity of this character. It was the frustration and the task at hand every day and how hard he was going to work at get going after and being the thing he wanted to be. And the life he wanted to live, and that's really where I found this real person. You know, that's what he. Every moment he's kind of saying, "Can you? Do you see me? Do you hear me? Look at me. Don't ignore me. You know, I want to be seen as the way I want to be seen. I want to, you know." He's just working. He's working toward the life he needs and wants.
Well, we can hear your voice on radio now, which, as you say, is really quite deep. Tell us what you did with your voice for the character of Rusty.
I just. You know, obviously manipulated it, but it was kind of a mesh. I just through documentaries and tapes I was watching, I found these three different gentlemen who were all, and one of them actually was, had gone through the operation, and he was the least flamboyant of the other two, because he wasn't in the entertainment world. He was an accountant or something. I can't remember. But then the other two characters were in the kind of the entertainment world, but not really. But they went to the drag shows and the balls and things like that. And they were, those two characters were extraordinarily feminine, their voice and the way that they carried themselves. But the guy who was the accountant or whatever he was, something like that, wasn't. He was struggling, and he had gone through the complete operation. And so they had a lot of, they had some footage of him where he actually was holding a mirror up to his face, trying, you know, saying, good morning, and like really trying to sound feminine and the way he looked. And that was the most fascinating thing I think I saw in my research, because what it told me was the effort and the time that they would put into, you know, not only, you know, the operation, but they had to actually practice. And so the combination of these three characters is kind of where I found this voice that I didn't really mimic, but it kind of informed and helped me get at something that I felt was accurate.
What was it like to look at yourself as Rusty, dressed as a woman with lipstick and, you know, a woman's clothes? Was it interesting to stare at yourself in a mirror that way, or see yourself on film that way?
It's very interesting. I staring myself in the mirror was going back to the thing I was saying earlier, that it just showed how bad a woman I was and how sad that was to me. Because there is this thing, because there's this pride of wanting to play this part, and you want to just kind of do yourself up and start acting this role and just be like, wow, I'm hot. Look at me. I'm a woman. And, you know, this is the furthest thing from the truth. And it helped inform who this guy was for me, the struggle that he was going to go through. But that was one thing. But then when I watched the film itself, it was just kind of spooky, because I wasn't able to, and this doesn't always happen, this rarely happens actually, I wasn't able to remember doing it.
You weren't able to remember doing the film?
Yeah, I remember doing it, but I would like be watching these scenes, I'm like, what was I doing? You know, like, how did I do that? I don't remember. You know, it was very, a very weird experience, because it was just so odd to see me like that. I think that was what was happening. It was odd for me to watch me like that, because it is very different from me. And I enjoyed it. I was happy. I was proud of it. But there was an odd feeling of like, did I do that? Well, as I was watching it, kind of a surreal feeling.
I think a lot of actors have the ambition of someday working with De Niro. You both had to do things that were very physically different for you. He's playing somebody who had a stroke and is partially paralyzed, and you're playing someone who's transgendered, a man dressing as a woman. So, like, you know, you're both having to really go to extremes in this. What was it like watching him work and get into his character with a partially paralyzed face and body?
Well, that's exactly it. It's he does meticulous work, and he's a perfect example of kind of what I'm talking about. You know, he shows up to the set and he's this very healthy man, De Niro. You know, he's very strong. He's still got a very young physique, you know, and a lot of energy. And he comes there in the morning and there he is. And then he starts to put on some prosthetics and do the work he needs to do. And all of a sudden he's this guy who can't walk and can't talk. And how he informs that role is beautiful. But here he is coming in the morning, like, you know, more in better shape than I am. So that's what it's like working with him, is seeing him do the meticulous work and the interpretive work that he does to get at what you eventually see, you know. And it did help me, because he was very calm about it and relaxed about it and step by step about it and A to B to C about it. And that's how you should be, because the movie sets move along so quickly and there's a lot of panic and tension, and we got to get shot, we got to get shot, we got to get done, we got to get done today or everyone will die type mentality. And so when an actor comes in of his stature and kind of says, I need to do what I need to do to get where I got to get, and he slowly does that, it's helpful to me.
My guest is Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's currently starring with Robert De Niro in Flawless. We'll talk about his other movies after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he stars with Robert De Niro in the new film Flawless. Let's talk about some of your early films, or earlier films. let's start with Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
And just to recap our listeners' memories, Burt Reynolds stars as a porn director in the 1970s who wants to make the kind of movies where people come for the plot, not just for the sex. And Mark Wahlberg plays his young discovery who becomes a star in the porn world. And you're part of the film crew. You have a crush on the Mark Wahlberg character. And at a party, you kind of overcome your inhibitions, invite him to come outside to take a look at your new red sports car. Then you give him a big kiss on the lips. And I want to play the clip of what happens here after that. Here's Mark Wahlberg's reaction.
I'm sorry, sir.
What the hell is the matter with you?
I'm sorry. I
why did you do that, Scotty?
You look at me sometimes.
What?
I want to know if you like me.
Well, of course. Yeah, I like you, Scotty.
Can I kiss you?
Scotty,
please,
I don't...
Please, can I kiss you on the mouth?
No!
Please let me.
Scotty!
I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to grab you like that or scare you or anything.
Sorry, man.
Do you want to kiss me or...
Scotty!
No?
What's the matter with you?
I forget it. I'm really drunk. Really, I am. I'm out of my head. I'm really wasted. Really, Dirk, yeah, I'm really just wasted.
That.
I'm crazy right now. I'm really crazy.
Do you want to go back inside?
Do you like my car, Dirk?
What?
I mean...
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, I wanted to make sure you thought it was cool or else I was going to take it back.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's great, Scotty.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Scotty.
I love you. I really love you.
I love you too, Scotty.
Okay.
Let's go back inside, okay?
All right. All right.
After that happens, you go into your new red sports car and you're crying, I'm such an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about creating this character, someone who's surrounded by beautiful people who have sex on screen, and he's very repressed, doesn't really accept his homosexuality, thinks he's incredibly unattractive and overweight.
I can't tell you how much fun we had doing that film, all of us. But yeah, I did have to play the guy whose shirt didn't go over his belly and tight shorts and the long hair and stuff, but that was all my choice. You know, I did that. But, no one put me in those clothes. That was my choice. I did that. I did all those things, that character. So, I have to live with it. All the good things and all the bad things that go with it. But I do think that that's who he was, and that's kind of how, honestly, I wanted to play him. And I do think it was honest. And it was the only way I felt that that character could be played with any... depth to it. I had a strong feeling that this character who was, he was my age, but basically he was 13. So I did a lot of literal expressions of that. The literal stuff was the costume. I basically wore a wardrobe of a 13-year-old. I remember when we were trying on the clothes, I kept saying smaller, smaller, smaller. And they're like, well, we're going into Macy's rack now, they said. That made me feel good. I was just, how does a guy from the valley talk? How does a guy who's really affected, doesn't know he's gay, from the valley talk? And I just came up with it. I just had a lot of different voices in my head, and I kind of meshed them all together and came up with this voice, and it seemed right. And then it informed how I moved my body, and then I just do all the internal work, which I always do, which is, what's it like to just, what's it like to obsess about somebody? What's it like to want somebody so bad? What's it like to go through the day and not be able to think about anything else but this one person? You just go from there and see what happens. I'm proud of the choices we made there, and Paul was really helpful all the whole way through. He was cautious at first when I brought in what I did, and then we just nurtured it together, and we both, I remember after shooting it and seeing it, I remember going to him and saying, thank you for letting me do what I did, and I think we did right by this part you wrote.
My guest is Philip Seymour Hoffman. Let's move on to another of your films, and this is Happiness. Now, in Happiness, everyone has some strange, usually unsavory quirk. And your character, you play someone who's very repressed sexually.
Yeah.
Stays home and basically his only sexual companion is himself. He makes these anonymous sexual calls. At the beginning of the film, we see you with your psychiatrist and you're telling him about the obsession you have with your neighbor. and you describe what you want to do with her, what you would do if you could get your hands on her. You'd undress her, you'd tie her up, and then you do a lot of things that I couldn't mention on the radio. And here's what happens next.
Oh, but she doesn't even know I exist. I mean, she knows I exist. I mean, we are neighbors, you know, we, you know, smile politely at each other, but I don't know I could ever really begin to talk to her. I mean, what can I talk about? I have nothing to talk about. I'm boring. I know. I've been told before, so don't tell me it's not true, because it's a fact. I bore people. People look at me and they get bored. People listen to me and they zone out, bored.
As you're saying this to your therapist, he's picking lint off of his pants very distractedly.
Yes, yes.
And then he starts to mentally run through his to-do list and his shopping list.
Yeah.
Now this is not the kind of role to make you think, hey, he's perfect leading man material.
No, it's not.
Did you have any concerns about that?
Nah, because I think he's repressed in a lot of ways, this guy. This character kind of is in his own orbit. Compared to most characters I've played. So I had to play him. It was one of those had to things. I read it, and it was just so fantastically written. And when I was auditioning for it, I auditioned about a billion times, and Todd was so specific with me, and I just knew. When I got the part, I remember my agent called me and goes, well, you got it. And I had auditioned like five times. And I remember going, oh, boy. That was the first thing I said. I was like, well, do I really want that? But I was kidding, meaning I was excited. I was excited to play this part. It's a great part. It's one of the best parts I've ever been given. I was lucky to get it.
Now, you put a lot of tension into your voice for this part.
Yeah. Yeah. That again, was another thing that just, like I said, the non-literal thing coming back up again. You know, how am I going to interpret how this guy behaves? I don't know. Sometimes he talks just like me. Sometimes he walks and acts just like me. But sometimes I was playing this part. I remember I was just doing something one day, and I was kind of working on it. And I just knew that he was kind of caving in on himself all the time. And so with the shoulders over and the caving in the chest, and just the voice kind of, the face kind of caved into, and that's the voice that came. I know that none of this makes any sense. It's just actor mumbo jumbo, but that's kind of what happened. So I had this weird voice.
Tension, no energy.
Tension, yeah. He's just kind of caving in on himself, you know, which made him sound different, that's all.
Let me get to another great film you were in, and that's Wonderland. Real different kind of film, you know, a romantic comedy, and a really different kind of role. In this one, let's see, I'm going to play a clip from the opening scene in which Hope Davis, who plays the girlfriend who you live with, comes home to find that you've taken all your things, you've packed the car with them, and you're ready to drive off and leave her.
I didn't mean it to be this way. The reasons why I'm leaving are on this tape. It points out the 6 points of why I think our relationship is doomed and why I'm leaving. You can watch it later. I was gonna mail it, but now I'll just give it to you now.
Are you taking your VCR? Did you leave that up there?
I bought the VCR. I'm taking my VCR. I bought the only thing I'm taking.
What is that on top of the car? Is that a futon on top of the car?
That's our futon. That's my futon. Can I please take the futon? Please? Violence is not the answer!
Don't be driving back here in a couple days, okay? Oh. I'm not going through this over and over and over.
I'm not. That's on the tape. I think that's point number four on the tape, because I have my vision, you have your vision, and I'm leaving because the Tantoonies need me. The Ten Toonies.
What?
It's an Indian tribe. It was in the newspaper. It was on CNN. You don't even watch TV. You don't read the paper. You don't know what's going on in the world. That's one of my reasons. That's point one.
You can't just walk out.
No, I know.
You can't just walk out,
listen,
Sean.
Listen, I'm going to go. And I'm not coming back. Please take Fidel.
I'm not taking Fidel, Sean.
Please take
I'm not
Fidel.
Taking your cat.
I don't have the time and energy to take care of the cat. I have to go and get something accomplished. That cat will be in the way. Ow! I am a man of peace. You are a woman of violence. I'm not a man like that. And you're turning me into that man. That's like point number eight.
This is a real departure for you because you're playing a kind of slightly magnified version of your standard self-righteous and sensitive boyfriend. You know, there's a whole genre of person who fits that category.
Yeah. No, it's funny because every part you play, there's a genre. You know, that's what I found out, is that every part you play, somebody's played that type of role 10 million times before. And that's kind of the job, is what new light do you want to shine on that part or that story? And Next Up Wonderland, that was kind of my take on that whole thing.
Were there people you could base this on? I mean,
we all know guys
like this, yeah.
Everybody knows people like this. I mean, I just remember college. Just college came to me. It was about three people in college that just completely jumped right at me when I read that thing. You know, roommates I had or whatever. That just, you know, that righteous state of mind, you know. That righteous, strong, I'm on the soapbox. I got to keep talking or I'm going to die. You know, I right. just know those guys. You know, I've been one of those guys. Who hasn't, you know, in one way or another? So I just kind of created him simply, you know, very simply, very much me in a way. But the way he his actions and how he, you know, how loud he is and how aggressive he is really the key to that role. You know, I had a lot of fun playing that role. We had a lot of improv that role.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's now starring in Flawless. This is Fresh Air.